It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here on a rainy day. And welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is how partnering improves your coaching business with Carly Anderson, Master Certified Coach. But before we get to Carly, let's go right to Carly. I'll tell you about me at the end. We're a little short of time today. Carly is a friend of mine. Carly is a coach that I truly admire. She is, by all criteria, truly a master coach. She is a brave person. She was one of the first groups of coaches to be trained in Sydney when Coach U brought their training to Australia in 1998. While attending the 125 hours of in-person coach training, boy, that's tough, Carly says she got hooked, and within 2 years, she sold her corporate consulting business and moved fully into coaching and mentoring. 2001, she was awarded the PCC credential, and 2004, the MCC credential. Becoming trained as a coach led to Carly meeting an American coach, who will remain unnamed at this point. He gets too much attention as it is. She met him at an ICF conference in 1999. They married in 2001 and moved to the United States. So to say coaching has impacted every part of Carly's life is an understatement. She has worked extensively as an executive coach, having coached over 450 people in Google. She co-founded the Mentor Coaching Group in 2013. She's on the faculty for Coach U and Corporate Coach U, and she is an active ICF assessor. And if you don't know what that is, she'll explain that to us. She's passionate about advancing the professionalism of coaching, which is why she's here with us in the studio today. Carly, welcome back.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you so much.
Hey, it is a pleasure to have you here. For those of you who don't know, because you weren't here before the show started, Carly got stuck in, if it rains a little bit in California, all traffic comes to a screeching halt. Carly got stuck in it on the freeway, is calling me frantically saying, I want to be there. How am I going to get there? And she made it a little late, but we can handle that.
Yes, life happens.
Yeah. So, look, tell us, I gave a little bit about the background, but that's sort of the statistics. What did you do before your current business model? What would you like to add to that?
My first love was the advertising industry. I fell into advertising when I was in my early 20s, and I ended up doing a lot of campaign creating, working to understand how to reach your target audience. So this was way before all of cable television. It was way before all of the multitude of media. But I just loved it. And I think the thing I want to add is that I became so good at what I did. I loved what I did, and I kept being rewarded and given more and better positions, to the point where I thought I was better than I was.
Oh, have we ever been there before?
But, I was like 26, and then I got offered a management position and in another company, and I sort of said yes. And to be honest, that was probably the worst thing I ever did and the best thing. It was the most significant thing in terms of my learning curve. It's probably leaving you hanging a bit, but let's just say I failed miserably as a manager and I had no support. And so that was my first recognition that communication skills, I needed help. But it took me a couple of years to recover from that quite devastating experience. Going from someone who's a high performer to someone who basically was told, you're terrible and you're out of here in like a year. Was devastating.
There's nothing like a good failure to give you a little sense of reality, is there?
Well, it got me searching for what I really wanted to do. And I ended up starting a consulting business with someone else, and we ended up being very, very successful. But it was a couple of years. It took me 2 or 3 years, and it was a pretty challenging. I can't say it was a leap. It was more like a crawl up the hill, and hopefully, and it all worked out well.
Well, obviously it has. And then you fell in love with coaching.
Well, yes, I knew from my corporate consulting work that there was a missing piece, because we would go in and create a picture, this graphic picture of the vision and values of a company, and then they would do nothing with it. They'd communicate within amongst themselves, but no change happened. And I was in Sydney in Australia, and I never heard of coaching. And then one of my colleagues, about 4 or 5 years into my business, he said to me, "You know, I'm bringing coaching to Australia. I have the license to bring Coach You to Australia. I think you'd be a great coach." And I looked at him and said, "You've got to be joking. I'm not a people person. I'm a businesswoman. What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, I think you should try it out and just see if you like it or not. And look, the many things converged to make that actually all happen, and I did. I fell in love with it about 20 hours into the 125 hours. So I was like, I'm hooked. I'm done.
It seems like all coaches have done that. It just sort of brings out, it taps the inner you,
yeah,
and brings out the passion that you have for working with people.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but, you know, there's that difference that makes the difference, and coaching to me is the difference maker. Consulting is great. Teaching is great. I do teach. Mentoring is great. But there's something about the spirit of coaching that I have fell in love with, and it's, what, 1998, and it's 2015, and I still feel fresh with it.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Great.
So you are very involved in the professional coaching realm.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what an assessor is for ICF.
Yeah, so the ICF has, I think, trained now at least over 90 or 100 people in the last year to be specifically assessors for a new way of assessing whether coaches meet a certain credential level for the PCC, which is our middle credential. The ACC is our sort of starter credential. And as you and I know, we have MCC, so we're at that level above the PCC. But I didn't realise how many assessors there were until I was put through this training by the ICF in the last year. And they have now literally trained 90 people just in this new process for assessing the standard and to be able to say, yes, you do meet the criteria for being a professional certified coach.
And what's the motivation behind this? What caused ICF to take this leap to set up a more formal system?
I think it's an evolution, Doug. It's just the next step, and I think, what is it? How old are we? 20, 25 years old as a profession?
20, yeah.
Yeah, we're not very old. And one of the things that I think occurs in any profession over time is you need to look at, well, does this still serve the original purpose? And so all the coach training schools, when they become an accredited coach training program or an ACTP, they need to meet criteria to coach to train their coaches or their new students to coach at a PCC level. That's the standard. So it's a worldwide standard. And so what they realised is that there's so many countries involved now all across the world. There's like, 20,000 plus members of the ICF alone, of which about 15,000 of those are credentialed. But they represent like over 100 countries or so. And so now, how do you actually create a system that is fair across cultures, that takes into account if anyone has an issue with the credentialing that they're given, so they create a fair evidence-based system? So that's what the evolution has come to.
You know, with those kinds of numbers, 90 new trained assessors isn't a very big number of people. You must be swamped.
Yes, well, it's a little misleading because the ACTP programs all do their own credentialing.
Okay.
So that's, they take, I don't know, I really don't represent the ICF as knowing this to be true, but I think at least 70%, that's my guess, of all people who apply for their PCC credential alone come through an ACTP program. So it's the 30% or the 20, 25, 30% of people who don't come through an ACT program, they come through what's called the portfolio track with the ICF that we directly assess. So they don't meet the criteria of an ACTP.
So what is it that you do when you say you assess?
Well, listen to a recording of the coach, and we'd have these, like now with the PCC markers, there's like 47 of these markers. And so by our competencies, we have 11 core competencies, and there are these markers. And so, and this is just about to be implemented. We're in our final stages of, and this has been a year process so far of training for this first group I've been involved in. But we've got to the point where we're almost ready to implement this in as a new system. So we've been practicing doing this, and still today, even I was on a call only a few hours ago where we were debriefing how we had marked a recording of somebody coaching. So as we listen, we have a transcript. Everybody's required now when they put in for their credential to actually give a transcript. Amazing, it's great. So we read and we listen, and we are able to then listen for which of these markers are being evidenced in that coaching. And we assess by saying, yes, there was enough evidence for that behavior to be marked. So, for example, the client, here's one I've got, coach inquires about or explores the client's use of language. That's one marker. So now we listen for how often the coach actually uses the client's language in their questions or in their observations. So if they do it often enough, if they miss it often enough, we don't mark it. But if they do it often enough for it to be, you know that they know how to do that,
yes,
then we mark it. So that's the process of assessing, getting to a point where we then are able to assess whether that actually meets a criteria for a PCC.
I think you just scared me to death. I don't know if I could give you one of my coaching transcripts and pass.
It's. I mean, that's why I do mentoring, and I myself put myself in the position of having my coaching assessed actually all the time. My clients have access to a whole library of me coaching, and we ask them to critique. Huh? And to actually do this process of feedback on my coaching. Plus, I have my own mentor as well. But I have to tell you, I'm over myself now when it comes to... And I don't really... As long as we can learn from it, and I can learn from it, and
sure,
I can be a better coach. But it is rather daunting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, we wanted to talk about partnering today. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean when you talk about partnering?
Well, the term has become sort of, I guess, the new term that ICF has been using. Actually, really not so new. It's sort of been around since 2006 or so with the definition of coaching. And now the ICF has, with this PCC marker process, has actually decided, oh, partnering is actually a core concept. And we better tell people what we mean by partnering so that people know, you know, coaches know how to do this. So the idea of partnering, I mean, in its essence, is really about the act of working with one or more people. I mean, that's really what it's at its,
sure,
essence. But the ICF defines partnering as part of its definition of coaching. So here's the definition that the ICF has of coaching, which is coaching is partnering with clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. So there it is, right in the definition, this idea of partnering. And so now teasing that out, it's like, I don't know about you, Doug, but you know, oftentimes when I got trained as a coach, I felt like I had to help the client do something and get something. And if they didn't get something of value, then I had failed. If they didn't walk away going, oh, wow, that was great, I got exactly, and they got a result, I felt like it was my failure.
Yeah, as if you could do it yourself.
Right, now
yeah,
there we go. It's not
yeah,
just me, it's
yeah,
us. It's
yeah,
the both of us. It's like across a tennis court. I mean, you can't, you know, you can because you can hit against a wall, but if you're playing tennis, you need two people.
Right.
And so this idea of partnering is about how you engage the client, how you ask and invite them to tell you what they need, what they want. And so it starts with the coaching agreement. I mean, we start by asking, what do you want from the session? And then we inquire more to understand, well, what does that mean to you? Why is that important? How will you know that you've made some progress? And the next question now, a partnering question that we really encourage coaches to ask is, where would you like to go next? Or how would you like to explore this topic? Now, in the past, Doug, I don't know about you, but I thought, oh, well, I'll just ask my great question. And so I would direct and lead the client based on my thinking and my process, you know, what I thought was important to pay attention to. But partnering says, I'm going to draw that information up from my client. What do you know about yourself? What do you want? How do you want to explore this? Completely different.
Totally different. Totally different. So let me just interrupt here and say that if you tuned in today thinking that we were going to talk about partnering in terms of getting a business partner with your coaching practice, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about partnering with a client. The fact that it takes two to coach.
It does. And yet, you think about it, the principle applies in business in general outside of the coaching relationship. I can consult to a client and I can say, okay, here's what I have to offer. You either take it or leave it. Or I can say, what do you want? What are you seeking? What is it that I can help you with? Now I have this. Can you use that service? So the idea of partnering actually...
It sort of takes some of the pressure off you as the coach to be the know-all, do-all, and recognize that it's really not all yours. Yes, you have a role to play, but it's a role as a partner.
Absolutely. Yeah, and part the idea, I think we start out with co-creating the relationship was a term that was used.
Yes.
Yet underneath all this was this idea of partnering, and I think we do it a lot naturally in business, but to actually make it more conscious that we actually invite the client or the potential client to tell us what they need and want, and then we compare that to what we can deliver, and we decide what we can do, what we can't do, and what we're willing to do to support that client in their business as a consultant or as a trainer or as a coach.
You know what, and I'm a little nervous today because as I'm talking here, I'm going, okay, now she really knows this coaching stuff. She's going to correct me right here. It's not going to be one of the 47 markers. But
go for it, Doug.
But anyhow, you know, we talk about coaching and the fact that in coaching you hold the client as whole and healthy and able to solve their own problems. Mm-hmm. As if they didn't need you, mm-hmm. which... If they didn't need you, why would they be here asking you to be their coach? The partnering concept sort of takes that a step further, if I'm understanding it right, and say that, yeah, they're whole and healthy, but it takes two to really work on this issue.
Exactly. Would that... Yes. Yes, you got
okay,
it.
Okay, I got it.
I'm not going to correct you.
I can handle it.
You can
Go
handle
ahead.
It. Yeah, no. You're right. You were asking me as an assessor what I listen for when I'm listening to coaching. And one of the things I'm listening for is the client's ability to trust the coach. And that will come from the way that the coach approaches the client. Mm-hmm. If the client, if the coach says, well, I'm here, let's do it. I'm here to help you get what you want. And we know there are people out there like that.
Yeah.
There's that motivational type thing. That is not really inviting the client to disagree with you. And I think of partnering as being the trust that you can build because you're co-creating and collaborating to the point where a client can say, you know what, I don't agree with you, coach. You're not, you know, this is how it is for me. And that level, to me, when a client is willing to say something that I've said is not true for them in some way or form, not that it happens often, but I want them to be able to do that, tells me that I have developed a partnership with this client to the point where they are feeling invested in us, not that I am doing something to them. Do you see, it's a completely different feeling.
And you know, for me, when the client sort of corrects me and says, that's not what I meant, to me, that almost always signals a breakthrough that we're going to get to the real issue.
Mm.
Now, it could signal that I wasn't listening well. Probably has happened.
No.
but many times what it is it's a sign that the client is finally, in hearing it back, repeated back, mm-hmm. in the partner, and this is what I think you're talking about, where I think we're going. the client hears the fact that, no, that's not what I meant at all. It may have been what I said, but it's not what I really meant. And now they're into the real issue.
Yes.
And so for me, some of the sting of, ooh, did I make a mistake, is gone when I start to think that, oh, goody, this is a breakthrough. They are really listening to themselves.
Mm. Oh, that's great.
You know.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
I think fits into the partnering concept here.
Yes, and one of the markers on that, there's a couple that you sort of alluded to, is coaching presence. And one of our core competencies is coaching presence. And there are four markers that actually are of the eight talk about partnering. And I think some of these you actually sort of alluded to. One is the coach partners with the client by supporting the client to choose what happens in the session. So, you know, that's not just what do you want from this session, but what's next? What do you want to have happen next in the session? And when we offer things, here's another one, coach partners with the client by playing back the client's expressed possibilities for the client to choose from. So the client may say, I have said three or four things. So the coach says, well, I heard you say this, this, and this. Where would you like to explore next? There's the partnering again, the invitation. And so that's that level of, you know, presence that we have as coaches to understand that we don't have to be this know-it-all. And in fact, that's the antithesis of good coaching, is thinking we have to prove to our client that we know. No, it's like you said, three things. I don't know which one, basically, you want to. Or maybe one thing I notice coaches mistake is they'll often think of them as three separate things. If the client says three things, they'll go, well, I heard you say this, this, and this. Which one would you like to focus on next? Versus, well, I heard you say these three things. How do they all relate to each other?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Because what you said earlier, if we're whole human beings, you know, we know within ourselves most of the things we talk about make sense, even if they don't make sense to other people. But we as the coach are not inside our client's world. We are trying to understand their world. So the more that we assume they are whole and that they have some way of organizing all of their references and possibilities. So to me, that's always a bit of a shift for coaches when they go from saying, well, which one do you want to go to next versus how do they all relate? And where would you like to explore next? It's a very different approach. That's that partnering again.
Yeah, I maybe even overuse the either or situation. I get so upset when people just think it's, I've always got to choose which one of the three or which one of the two. I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. Who said you can't do them all? Or,
right.
Or as you put it beautifully, what do they have in common? How are they connected?
Yeah.
Yeah. It opens up a whole different path to explore.
It does, and I'm rather enamored with a particular marker. I was talking about it earlier on a call. This one, I don't know, Doug, I'd be interested. I've never really asked. This is a question, and so this is the marker. Coach helps the client define what the client believes they need to address or resolve in order to achieve what they want to accomplish in the session. So let's say the client says, I want to have a business plan, I want to have a plan, okay. What does a plan mean to you? So what part of that, what would be important for you to have move forward? Because it's a huge subject. So what would be, why has this come up now? What's meaningful to you? But then the question is, what might we need to address in order for you to get this outcome today? And so that could be internal barriers. It could be, I have this thought about this other person that is not serving me to get what I want because I don't want to talk to them. So it could be an emotional or a self-defined barrier. Or it could be an external barrier, like I don't have the time because this project has to be done by then. So I need to work out how to get this plan done when I have no time. Now we know we have to address time. We have to address the plan. We have to address, you know, we listen for often barriers. We listen for what the client might need to work on. But to actually externalize that into a partnering type question, what do you think we'd need to, or what do you believe we'd need to address today in order for you to get the outcome you're looking for? It's a completely different question than I've ever really asked, and it's pretty amazing when I've been asking it the results.
But you're talking I'm going to just label it an attitude about the coaching that really says I'm stepping away from holding myself as being required to direct, and instead I'm collaborating.
Yes.
You know, which we know in business, when we can get a group to sit down, we can get people to sit down and collaborate, the ideas that come out of collaboration are so much stronger, you know, and when they can let go of whose idea it was, and we're just looking for the best idea. Carly, this is, you've opened up a whole new, or the ICF has opened up a much broader sense of working with the client than I really had thought about before. I love it. Do you think it's a major shift, or I think you labeled it an evolution.
Yeah.
But do you think it's significant?
Yeah, I think the concept of creating a partnership. I mean, we've heard about that in business forever. I mean, we even have partnerships. I mean, that's the term when we have businesses. But this idea of partnering, I sort of also think of it as both parties have to be engaged in wanting to understand what the client wants. And so the coach's role really is to bring their best coaching, to understand, you know, and to ask the questions, to understand what the client really wants. So the partnering is not about the coach bringing their expertise of, you know, consulting type expertise. It's about them eliciting the information from the client. So it's like, help me understand you. I want to understand you. I have a mentoring group, and yesterday we have a client that I call it the five-headed coach. So over five different sessions, there's five different coaches in the mentoring group, and they are coaching one client as if it's one client.
At the same time?
No, over five different sessions.
Okay. Yeah. Poor client.
Poor client. And we had this conversation after about how, I mean, really to partner with this client who was not an easy client. She was not an easy client. Now, the job, I said, of the coach was to understand this client. And I likened it to her being an octopus.
Okay.
Now, one of my mentoring clients happens to be a certified scuba diver and just come back from another part of the world scuba diving. So I went into his world and I said, so this client is like an octopus and we're all fish. And here we are, we're swimming around and we're seeing this octopus and going, what does this octopus do? How does this octopus use these eight tentacles? I don't have those. How do they swim? How do they do things? So that's like me as the coach. My job is to understand the octopus, not to say you need to be a fish.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the hardest part, is I need to understand you. I need to bring my coaching skills, my listening skills, my questioning, my understanding. Help me understand you. You know, that's really to me what partnering is about. Help me understand, and I seek to understand you and what you're about and how you do things, how you process things. And let me see if I can use my best coaching skills to support you to get there.
And you know, as I'm listening to you talk about this, I'm thinking that where this really starts is in designing the coaching alliance.
Mm-hmm.
If we stopped calling it a coaching alliance and we said we're designing the partnership agreement, I mean, I'm going to my business experience. What do you have to do in any partnership agreement? You have to decide what are the roles for each of the individuals involved. You have to decide what are the common values, what are the objectives, what is the duration, what is the end goal of the partnership, how are we going to work together, how do we let each other know when it isn't working. What is the way of dissolving or changing? All of those sort of things that go into a legal partnership agreement. When you think of designing the coaching alliance as a partnership, it makes it, at least in my mind, almost easier to design the coaching alliance.
Mm. maybe a new way of doing it.
And actually, in terms of business coaching, might make it easier for the client to understand what I mean when I say the coaching alliance, if I said our coaching partnership agreement.
I like that. That's nice.
Does that?
Yes. The coaching plan or the coaching, the bigger plan for the whole engagement. I'm glad you brought that up because that's really where the partnering starts.
Yes.
And I have the privilege of coaching some pretty amazing leaders. And I've got one I'm speaking to tomorrow. I'm just thinking of her, and we're halfway through a coaching engagement, and we're about to do a midway checkpoint, 3 or 4 months into an engagement. And it's like I feel like this client has been so. I have worked with her as a partnership because it literally took her 4 sessions to work through her coaching plan, and really work out what she wanted to achieve. And then, you know, before that, we have the engagement for how do we even get to be coaching this person, which is a different type of, that's, I think, the first one you're talking about is how do we even engage as partners in this? And now we have the individual client that we are coaching. And to me, taking the time to understand and have them understand what's the biggest bang for your buck here? You've got me as your coach. We've got this engagement. This is about high potential. This is taking her to really the next level. This already high-performing person. And how do you then take yourself to the next step? So that takes time. And if I felt like a real collaboration, you mentioned that word earlier. I'm not sure about the distinction between collaboration and partnership. You've got me thinking about that too. Maybe you've got some ideas. But that idea of really understanding what the goals are and what you want from what she wants from me, what we want from what the company wants, because now the company wants to know how we're doing halfway. So now we're engaging her manager. And so there's all these partnerships, if you want to think of it like that. And how do I collaborate and partner with these people? It's just a different, it's slightly different framework of thinking from at least my perspective.
Yeah, maybe it's just business background. It sounds more comfortable than so many other ways that we as coaches have talked about it. It sounds more understandable to the client.
Mm.
You know, it wouldn't be, it always kind of strikes me how normal it is to get a new coaching client and they come to you with an issue. Because obviously, why are they looking for a coach? But we know that many times it's going to take a number of sessions before we really have decided what the real objective of the coach. What is the real issue? What is the real objective of the coaching? You probably came to me with a symptom, not with what the issue really was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the partnership starts right there with defining what it is we're really going to be doing and getting them comfortable that this is a partnership. You're not coming to me because I've got all of the answers. You're coming to me because I've got some skill sets that in conjunction with your own are going to give us a better solution.
Yes. And I think that's the first thing that most coaches need to do is define their skill set. What do you bring to the table? If you're not consulting, training, teaching, then what skills are you contributing to this partnership?
Well, if I'm a PCC, I have 47 markers I'm contributing, which I have no clue what your 47 markers are. Where can I look those up?
They're actually publicly available. They're a document on the ICF website, which is coachfederation.org.
Yeah, I know that.
And under the individual credentialing tab.
Okay.
There's, I think, it's PCC. You can click on then PCC or professional certified coach. And there on the left-hand column, you'll see PCC markers. And it's a publicly available document for anybody.
Oh, okay. Do they have the same thing for the MCCs?
They're working on a system, yep, that's coming out, but it's going to be different because the MCC is measuring different things. So there's a task force that's been working on that for About a year, and probably next year.
Good, I'm safe for a while. Yeah. They don't know how to evaluate me yet.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming.
It's coming. So, what is your take on the markers? How does your knowledge of these markers, how has it impacted your coaching?
Well, funnily enough, I was asked that question by my colleagues this morning on a faculty call. And because I'm one of three people in my coach training school that has been trained in these new markers, and there's like 50 people on faculty who are struggling with these, and how do we integrate these for students, and what do we do? And I've been testing in practicums using these, and with fantastic results. So one of the things I could say as a mentor, as a trainer of coaches. One of the things that I have been impressed with by really focusing, and they listen for these markers when they're coaching each other in these practice sessions, is that they are identifying things that I would consider quite high skill level PCC. So for instance, when you take your attention off of the words the client is saying and put some attention onto what's happening with the client, if it's in person, you can see body language and you can also hear tone, right, and emotion, and that when you're not in person with them. So this particular student yesterday was coaching someone in the call, and he was able to say, you know, I'm hearing in your voice, you sound really tired. You sound like, and I've heard this before in the other weeks, but it just sounds like you sound really tired. And this person, the coach, the client, was like, I mean, it was an amazing moment where she actually was able to identify that she was actually very tired and why that was and how that was impacting her work and her workload and everything. So that is coming directly from studying these markers over the last, he's been with me 7 weeks. And so one of the markers is the coach basically observes energy shifts or emotions or tone or pace. I mean, any one of those things, they're actually specific markers. The coach notices these things. And so to me, that's been the biggest shift for me as a coach as well, is to put more attention on what is happening with the client than their words alone. So if the client goes, okay, so, you know, and so the first, I would say, oh, that was a big sigh. What was going on there? That will open up, I guarantee you, that will open up a deeper conversation and a more truthful level of what's going on than if you just pay attention to the words that come after that.
Fit, give me the context for how these markers fit within the core competencies. Because the core competencies I'm familiar with, which are relatively broad statements. I mean, they're what? A sentence long and then a paragraph, a huge paragraph to describe what the sentence means. If I'm visualizing the list right.
Yeah.
How did the, but there's only, what, 11 core competencies? How many?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's 11.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, but yet we've got 47 markers. So how do the markers tie into the core competencies of coaching?
Yes. So it's interesting. There are 70 subpoints under the 11 core competencies. I mean, can you believe that?
This is not going to help.
No. So getting down to 47 feels like moving in the right direction. No, but I mean, for instance, creating the coaching agreement or establishing the coaching agreement, there are 5 markers. There's evidence. You can go and read those and you can go, okay, am I identifying what the client wants to accomplish in the session? Yes. Am I helping the client identify how they might measure their success toward that by the end of the session? Check. Do I understand what might be really important or meaningful to the client about this? Or am I listening for that? Check. Am I continuing the conversation in the direction that the client wants to go? Or am I interested in something and I've taken it off in a lovely direction, had a lovely conversation, but it has nothing to do with what the client wanted? So there are these under each competency, there are between like 3 and 8 markers.
Okay, so would it be correct to say that the markers are the observable behaviors in the coaching context of your application of the core competencies?
Yes, and now you've brought it full circle to your first question, is how did these come about? Well, evidence-based assessing is an important criteria for a world-class credentialing or assessment system, and the ICF has taken on a desire and on all levels to be a world class at what they do. So they've studied different assessing systems in different industries, and having evidence-based or behavioural-based markers is one way they can be defend their point of view on why a credential is awarded at a certain level.
Okay.
So it's a professional thing.
Which brings us to what does all of this really mean? I mean, the coaching profession is not legislated in any way. There is not a state license, a federal license. So the ICF has become the de facto licensing agency with multiple ways in which to get your training and your experience to then apply for your license with three different levels of licenses that you can achieve. And most coaches, I think, sort of stop at that point. Okay, that's what the ICF's all about. It's my license that I can now display that says I understand what I'm doing. What I hear you talking about is taking it a whole lot further in terms of what are you doing in your coaching? What assessments are you using, not on your client, on yourself, to validate that you are coaching right, staying current, that you are remain on the cutting edge of what this profession is all about?
Absolutely. And I think that it's important for all of us coaches to have some accountability to our own level of continuing education. I mean, we do have this thing called CCEUs, Coach Continuing Education Units, but they don't always, depending, it's such a wide range of what you can choose. I would recommend that every coach chooses at least, I would say, once a year to have somebody listen to their coaching and give them some feedback on the competencies using what, you know, whether they're at PCC or whatever, but it doesn't matter. It's like have somebody who's qualified, who understands the competencies, to actually give you some feedback. I have somebody in my mentoring group right now who just got her MCC, her Master Certified Coach credential in November, and she's joined my mentor coaching group as a student. Because she wants to continue to grow and learn, and she's rare. I mean, most people who come to my mentoring group are just wanting to get their next credential. But you think about it. I mean, if we stop and go, I want to make sure that I'm being the best representation of coaching I can be, and I'm, as you said, as current as I can be, get some input from somebody who can, you can say, oh, here's where you're doing great, and here's where you could, you know, just be aware, upgrade that. Your questions maybe, you know, go deeper with the client's language. Pay attention to the client's emotions, or pay attention to the client's energy when it shifts significantly in a session. So you can give some specific things, and there's evidence in these markers if we use those alone. There's plenty. I've got them here. There's also the ICF Core Competencies Rating Levels document that's publicly available on the ICF website. There's plenty of ways. But right now, I think these PCC markers are a great way to measure, but get someone to actually help you identify your coaching level.
You know, I love what you're talking about, because, you know, I've been in MCC for a long time, and I keep renewing my credential, and I keep fulfilling the educational experience requirements, but I would have to admit that many times the way I fulfilled it have not done much for me. I went to the meeting, I listened to the talk. Great. It was something I already knew, something that had no application. It wasn't something that had much relevance to how well am I communicating with my clients. And that's what this is about. That's what this whole assessor, which, you know, I've totally changed the way I look at what you do. I had looked at what you do before this show as someone who helps and does the testing to get a credential. What you've switched in my brain here today is someone who can give feedback as to how well I am communicating and using my skill set with the client.
Oh, good.
Which is a different thing.
Oh, would you say that's a different coaching perspective, Doug?
Hey, what show are we listening
are we
to?
Listening?
The Coaching
Yay.
Perspective.
There it is, the Coaching Perspective.
Hey, we're just about ready to wrap up with that. It can't get any better. Thank you for throwing
segue.
That to me. Carly, before we wrap up, what did you not get across? Did I interrupt or sidetrack you on that you want to get across to the audience before we close here?
Well, I think that last point is probably the one that I really want people to know. For me, I feel very proud and privileged to be a coach. I pride myself on my professionalism, and part of that means being humble enough to ask for feedback and do the same thing and put myself in the same learning mode that I ask my clients are going through as well. So get some input from people, on occasion, that can help you identify what your coaching skill is at versus judging you.
Yes.
That's different. This is like, no, this is where it's at. And it's a different...
Again, constructive.
Let's say it's a partnering approach.
Okay. All right. So you have a lot to offer. How do people get a hold of you? How do they find you?
Well, they can just simply go to my website, carlyanderson.com. And then from there, there's different options. I have a blog that I write every 2 weeks that, I'm very proud of it, again, because I really do try and give some tip that is, or write something that's very usable from the competencies. And I really do want to support our profession and to have more professional coaches. So take advantage of that.
Well, let me just tell you that I subscribe to a lot of blogs. Yours is one that I always read.
Oh, thanks.
And I always get something out of it. So thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Doug.
Carly, it's great having you on the show. Thank you very much for fighting the rain, the traffic, the freeways, my ridiculous questions, and showing up here. If any of you listening have nothing to do, you've got about 60 minutes to get over to the Wyndham Hotel to hear Carly talk to the Orange County chapter tonight. If you hadn't already planned on that, you probably blew it. But but I'll be there. Carly's going to be there, and we'll get to go in more depth on this subject, and it'll be a great presentation. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks, Doug.
Well, thank you for being here. And again, welcome back to the Coaching Perspective radio community.
Thank you.
Well, you've been listening to the Coaching Perspective. We've been talking about partnering, and if you tuned in late, we will make sure that this will be up on our Podbeam site. If not tomorrow, certainly by Monday it will be there. And I would encourage you to take the time to listen. If you've been listening to the whole show, you might want to listen to it again and go back and catch some of those things that you got sidetracked on. Our objective here is always to provide you with information that we hope that you can use to put to use immediately to make your coaching more effective. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a certified business coach, Doug DeFeller.